Welcome to Reinvention Ready. I'm your host, Janie Genosis. I'm delighted to introduce you to my guest, Melanie Lutke-Taylor. Melanie is a seasoned professional. She holds an MBA. She has executive leadership certification. She's a wealth of knowledge on business and leadership. But what makes Melanie really unique is that she is dealing with a personal challenge that gives her a very unique perspective on life. Melanie is using this challenge to redefine leadership, helping people understand more about emotional intelligence and guiding them when they're transitioning into their next role. Melanie is also an author. Her book, Voices of the 21st Century, has been an international bestseller. And Melanie is a TEDx speaker, and that's where I found her, where she shares her story and really moved me to invite her to the show. So I am so excited for her to share more with you. Melanie, welcome to Reinvention Ready. I am so excited to have you on our show today.
Janie, I am so looking forward to it. Thank you for having me, really.
And I have to say, I listened to your TED Talk and it just blew me away. You know, you have such a story. Can you give us a quick synopsis of that story and tell us a little bit about what you're facing today?
Sure. Well, I really enjoyed doing the TED Talk because I think it opened the eyes to some people who have seen it around, you know, what it actually means to have like a hidden disability, right? So I have what's called retinitis pigmentosa, and it is it's a genetic eye disease, and it's pretty rare actually. But what it does is over time, it really the rods and cones in your retina disintegrate basically. And so you're born with this. And so my father has it, my brother has it, my uncles have it, my grandfather had it. I actually happen to be the only woman in the family that has it. Lucky
Oh my gosh.
Me. Which actually has its own challenges. But this eye disease is a progressive disease. So while you're born with it, you have more eyesight when you're younger. And as you grow older, you lose a lot of that eyesight. And the tough thing with RP is actually there's no understanding of when your eyesight will go. There's no case study that says, here's the actual timeline that you have. You know, some of us are blind by the time we hit 20. Others are blind by the time they hit 80. It just, there's really no telling what your actual path will be in life. And so that presents its own challenges, right? You kind of grow up with an idea of here's what I want to do for work when I get older, and here's the life that I want to live as I get older. And, you know, this is something that really could change that, right? Like, for example, I wanted to be a nurse when I was younger. I don't think you probably want me sticking you with needles today. You know, it's just not a viable job for me. So, so one of the things that I really talked about in the TED Talk was, you know, you have to be acceptance of who you are and what is going to happen. This is not something I can change. There is absolutely no cure for it. There's not even really good scientific studies right now on what slows the progression either. So it really is something you just have to accept. This is what I have. This is who I am. And this is likely what's going to happen at some point in your life.
Right.
I talk a lot about preparation. I am a huge planner. So that's actually what I did in the first half of my career is I was an event planner. I was a marketer and then an event planner. And planning is super important because I feel like I'm always kind of reinventing myself and my life because you have to adapt to really what is happening. So, and then I talk about coping because while I'm typically a pretty down-to-earth positive person, there are days when I am not. So, you know, it gets to you sometimes when you're around people who maybe don't understand that, you know, you you have to walk a lot slower in public, or you know, you could run into lampposts at any time. It's a lot of fun sometimes. So so anyway, I have probably about 10% of my vision left. And what it does is it destroys your peripheral vision first. So I can see straight ahead of me fairly well, but anything kind of to the sides is pretty much gone. So that makes a lot of things, you know, challenging that you wouldn't normally think of.
Yeah. Wow.
And you had a quote on your Instagram that I thought really spoke well. It was from Johnny Weir, and it said, "I'm not conceding. I'm just being realistic." And what would you like to share with people that are facing something in their life that's unchangeable? You know, this podcast is geared towards folks who are older or going through, I shouldn't say older, but, you know, we feel young, right? But the reality of
always.
It is, you know, the reality of it is we're never going to be any younger than we are today. And as we move forward in life, things start to go out of our, you know, our bodies break down, our, it's just nature. And what would you say to people that are dealing with those things that they can't change, that are part of their new reality?
Well, I loved how you framed that question, because while what's happening to me happens to me, it's, you know, like I said up front, it's rare what I have, but I don't think I'm any worse off than anyone else who's going through big stuff either, right? Mm-hmm. You know, there are people who have to take care of their parents, who have to take care of sick children, who, you know, move to a different country and have to adapt to that, who, you know, have these really big challenges in their life. And let's face it, any challenge you're dealing with is big. It's big to you personally,
right?
And so that's something that I really talk about too, is I'm not really special, right? I'm not special. My challenge is my challenge, but your challenges are your challenges. And so conceding to me is like a frame of mind, right? Conceding is like giving up. Right. I don't want to do this anymore, so I'm just going to give it up. And that's not how I feel about anything. Mm-hmm. You know, I feel lucky in a lot of ways that I've reached 50 and I still have some of my eyesight, right? Like, I feel lucky about that, because thankfully I still have my father, who I adore, and he has very little of his vision left, very, very little. And I feel lucky that I can still see my grandson and that I can still play with him in different ways. And I feel lucky that that I can still work, you know, and mm-hmm. things like that, where a lot of people who have what I have don't get those things. So I think conceding is a frame of mind about giving up, where being realistic is just, I'm just accepting this and I'm okay with it most days. I'm okay with it most days. and I just need to find ways that make me happy regardless of this big thing. Right. I just need to find, if I can't do one thing, like I can't do gym with my grandson, I cannot, because there are other little 2-year-olds running around, I will knock them. I would be like a bowling ball to the little children.
Because they're not paying attention to you. So
no, God love them, you know, and I will just run them over.
Right.
And so can't do gym. But what I can do is I can go to swim class with him and I can teach him swimming. Hmm. So I find those things that I can do instead of dwelling on the things mm-hmm. that I can't do. And I think that is what I mean by, you know, I'm not conceding. I'm just accepting. I'm just accepting the realities of the situation and making the best of it. That's what it comes down to.
Yeah. I mean, I heard a couple things from you that, when I want to point, you talked about gratitude a lot. You know, you said, I'm grateful for this. And again, I think even when we're facing really difficult challenges, there's always something we can be grateful for. And if you can
100%,
focus 100%. On that, it shifts the energy, I think, too. And then focusing on what can you do versus what can't you do. I've had to eat some very restrictive diets over my life with some weird allergies and things. So I've had to focus on what can I eat rather than, oh, well, I can't have this anymore, you know, and it's fine when you do it that way. Like you say, not every day you're happy, but it just right. puts you in a happier mood and I think a better place, more grateful, more open, more seeing possibilities rather than lack of. And that's, well, it's an energy shift.
I'm grateful to be alive.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So worrying all day, every day about what is happening or dwelling on what is happening is just no way to live. It just isn't, you know, that's what drives anxiety. It's what drives depression. Mm-hmm. You know, it really isn't a way to live. And one of the things that I've really focused on is I don't just want to exist in this life. Like, it's easy to exist. If you really wanted to,
yeah.
you could just exist.
Right.
But I would rather thrive. I'd rather have a sense of accomplishment. I would rather, you know, help people or be positive. Like, I would rather do that than just exist in life. And so I remind myself all the time, my sisters made me a bracelet, which I love. It's like, don't just exist, you know, really make sure that you're focused. Matter of fact, someone asked me yesterday or the day before, they asked me, you know, what I'm most proud of. And one of the things I had to say was that I'm most proud that I calculate risks really well, and then I still do things, right? So for example, if you've ever been to Ireland and you wanted to kiss the Blarney Stone, it's at Blarney Castle, and you have to walk up like 100 tiny little winding 1,000-year stairs to get to the Blarney Stone. And I just looked at that and went, oh my goodness, this is going to be really, really hard for me to do, right? I can't see anything below my chin ever unless I'm looking down. And there's no railings. You knew it was hazardous to somebody like me, but I did it anyway with help. You have to be able to ask for help, but I did it anyway. And I think that's what I mean by thriving and not just existing.
Yeah.
Like, understanding what your limitations are is important.
Mm-hmm.
Pushing that boundary sometimes is important, as long as you really look at the risk and make sure, mm-hmm. I'm not going to do anything that's going to hurt someone else. That mm-hmm. will never happen. I don't drive anymore because that's a good chance I could mm-hmm. hurt someone else,
right?
Not just myself, but someone else. And so I don't drive. And that's probably one of the harder things I've had to do, was make that decision. But it was important. So I won't do that, but I will push my own boundaries a little bit mm-hmm. just to see what I can do. We went walking in the jungle last week, which was not easy either.
Wow.
So I think there's, not existing is important. It's just accepting your limitations and then understanding what you can do to push that a little bit, but not too far where you go overboard. Can't go overboard.
Yeah. And still finding richness in life. I mean, you're kissing the Blarney Stone and walking in the jungle. I mean, most of us can't say that are totally able-bodied, you know? So that's fun. Yeah. Tell me about the jungle. Where in the jungle were you?
We went to the Dominican Republic last week, actually. I know, it was such a well-needed vacation, I'm telling you. But they have this great place where you can go and swim in underwater caves. And but the trek there is not, it's not paved. It's the jungle. So it's not paved. It was really hard to navigate. My husband, God bless him, I love him so much, because he knows how hard it is. So he'll figure out how to help me. And then you've got to go down these wooden stairs into the underground pool. And it's so dark down there. I can't see anything in the dark. So, mm-hmm. but you know, the funny thing is, as I was standing there on the side of the pool, this underwater pool or under cave pool, and one of the gentlemen trying to get out actually said to me, he said, "I'm blind and I can't see the stairs. Can you help me?" And I'm like, oh my gosh, yay! Someone else who's not just existing, they are pushing their boundaries and doing this too. And so, and he had to ask for help, and God love him for help, you know, asking for help. Because that's so hard for so many of us to do. I've talked to so many women with so many big challenges, and that is the major story that I hear all the time is, I didn't want to tell anybody because I was embarrassed, or because, you know, I didn't think anybody else would understand, or, you know, those kind of things. I've talked to people who have children who are addicted to drugs, or, you know, someone who has maybe sexual assault in their background. You know, these women don't want to talk about it because they're afraid no one will understand what it is they're going through. And I think as women, we struggle with that, with asking for help or asking for support when we really need it. There are way too many people dealing with things by themselves.
Yeah. We don't have to do things alone. And I think we forget, you know, there's a community out there. There are people that we know how good it feels to help somebody else. Like you said, you help somebody go up the stairs and, you know, you were able to help somebody who could see probably less than you could, or didn't have the experience you had. Everybody has something to give and some wants to help. And so by not asking, you know, you're also preventing those people from being able to give as well. So it's kind of a beautiful symbiotic relationship that we need to get more in touch with, especially as women. I agree.
Definitely agree.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, that's part of my story too. I worked in corporate for many, many, many years, and I never really told anyone that I was dealing with, you know, the loss of my eyesight. I was really good at faking it. Really, really good at faking it. No one really ever knew until maybe the last few years, where I finally had to share. So I was an event manager for major conferences, like 20,000 people. And I was really good at delegating the things I couldn't do, like going in the dark behind a massive screen at the MGM Grand, or, you know, there are lots of things that an event manager you have to do that are in the dark or around a lot of people. And so I was really good at delegating those. The person that worked for me, who I still adore, she didn't even realize it until we were just walking in this huge wide hallway. And I ran smack into a cement bench, full speed, straight into the cement bench. And she's like, "We have all this space. How did you miss this bench?" And so I finally had to talk to her about, okay, so this is what it is, and this is what's happening. And it took me, I mean, we had probably worked together 5 years by then. So I didn't share it with anybody because I was afraid that they wouldn't think that I was good at my job, or that I could do my job, even when I was doing my job really great. And they would think that, and they would think differently of me. And that was what I was most scared about. And so, but what I found is when I started sharing it, people were more than willing to help me do the things I couldn't do, while I was eager to pick up the things I more could do. And so it really became a great relationship. And I think that's what I mean by share and tell the people you trust, because they'll understand. They'll understand, and they will help and be okay accepting that help. Mm-hmm. Be okay with it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the other part, is accept it. Accept the help. It's really hard to do, especially if you're one of those stubborn and independent type people, maybe, who just also feels like you got to do it all yourself, or you don't want to burden somebody else. I think that's the other reason a lot of people don't want to ask for help, because they think, oh gosh, I'll be a burden to somebody else. And
right.
You know, well, trust them to say no if it's not right for them. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Well, we're the caretakers as women. So like we mostly do it by ourselves if we need to. And so it's really hard for women to ask for help and to lean on someone else. But I think it would help with stress levels. It would help with anxiety levels. It would help with depression levels. Like you need to find somebody who you can trust and who you can ask for help, because it really is important, not just to your mental health, but also to theirs, knowing they're helping you. Mm-hmm. So it is that symbiotic relationship. I agree.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And I think it was on your website, I think I saw you talked about IQ versus EQ.
Yes.
And yes. You said that we need 2 times more EQ than IQ. And so I think most people have heard of EQ, but maybe just in case they haven't, let's define that if you could.
Look a little bit.
Yeah.
EQ is your emotional intelligence. Mm-hmm. So there are really 4 parts to emotional intelligence. It's being self-aware, which is really the foundation for all emotional intelligence. It's how self-aware are you? It's about being able to manage your emotions. So not only knowing what your emotions are or what triggers you, but also being able to manage to that. And then there's the social awareness, which is really more about, for me, a big component of empathy. Like being mm-hmm. able to empathize with someone is part of social awareness. Being able to recognize emotions in other people and being able to empathize with them. And then social management is the 4th one. And that's really about, you know, being able to make connections and build trust with other people. And so the funny thing is that most of us think that we are self-aware. Most, like 90% of us feel like we are self-aware. But research shows only 10 to 15% of us actually meet that criteria.
Wow.
And so
that's low.
I'm on this
really low.
Right? That's a low number, especially when people who are more self-aware are actually 6 times more likely to be successful.
Hmm.
So if only 10 to 15% of us are actually self-aware, that's way too low of a number for us to be successful, like for more people to be successful.
And especially if we think we are. So that's a huge disconnect too, you know,
yes.
Between, yes, I am. And oh, no, you're not. You know?
Oh, no, you're not. Not really. Yeah. And that's my mission, I think, because I very much work with young women, especially who just don't know what they want from life and haven't really given it any thought. They don't have the ability to be mindful about how they're responding to things or what are their triggers. Especially in leadership, I think it's really important because, like I said, self-awareness is the foundation. So if you're not self-aware, you really can't lead other people very well.
Mm-hmm.
And so over my many years in corporate, I saw way too many managers who just lacked that ability to be self-aware and therefore lacked the ability to be social aware and be empathetic towards their employees. And mm-hmm. so for me, that's where I focus, because I think it's the basis for success. It's being able to, you know, really understand what is driving your anxiety, is driving your depression, is driving your burnout levels. Burnout is a huge thing right now, especially after COVID. Like too many people are overwhelmed with everything that they have going on. And in my case, it'd be really easy. You know, I'm losing my eyesight. I have to reinvent myself again. I have to, you know, I have children and I have a grandson, and it's easy to be overwhelmed, but you also need that understanding of what it is that actually creates that overwhelmed feeling in yourself and then manage it, right? Know what stress level you can take and don't take over that stress level, right? Find ways to reduce it. And so one of the things I did is I went and I got certified in EIQ assessments so that we could really assess people's levels of the, in these four areas, and then build plans to help them increase their awareness and their management of those areas, because it's really important for their own success, whether it's whether they want to be a leader or not. You know, having that basis and having that knowledge of yourself and how other people see you and how you see other people is just a life skill that can be taught, as much as, you know, as much as anything else, as much as IQ. So, yeah, it's definitely a passion of mine, especially empathy, knowing way too many people with hidden disabilities. You know, I can't even begin to tell you some of the things that I've heard. You know, it's people tend to be very empathetic when they can see things. You know, a ASPCA commercial comes on the TV and we're all like bawling, right? These poor animals. We're empathizing with these with these poor animals. And so most of us are very empathetic with what we can't see. But when it's something that we don't understand or something that we can't see, that empathy level goes way, way down, right? If you think about how many times you've yelled at another car because they cut you off or because they're not driving well enough or whatever, you know, the reality is you don't know what's going on with that person at all. You don't know if they're bawling in the front seat for some reason. Should they be driving? No. But you don't know where their head is or what has happened.
Are they rushing to the hospital because someone's dying? Or did they just get fired from their job and they're driving home and they're not thinking straight? Yeah, you never know what's going on. Or are they just, maybe they are just a jerk, but you don't have to be one too, you know? I mean, it's...
and they could be. And the way I think about that is if they are just a jerk and they just don't know how to drive, then me being mad at them does no good.
Right.
It just doesn't do any good. It just makes me angry.
Yeah.
And now I'm driving angry, which is, it doesn't make any sense. But they don't know that I'm angry at them and they don't care that I'm angry at them. So what is the point? Like, why are you angry? And so I have to remind my husband that quite frequently. Like, it's okay. It's
fine
not
too. It's like, we're alive. It's fine. You know, just keep driving. It's focus on where we're going, not what just happened.
That's right. It's really okay. So I think that empathy of things you can't see, it's, you almost have to switch your mindset about it. It's okay, I don't know what's going on with that person. You know, okay. Oh my God, this person in the grocery store. Like, I have to remind myself that I hate the grocery store because I can't drive a cart and shop at the same time. I can't do it. It's just not... Yeah. I will run you over. I just can't do it.
Yeah.
So maneuvering around people at the grocery store is really, really difficult for me. And I have to remember that no one else thinks, oh, I shouldn't be standing in the middle of this aisle. Oh, I don't, you know, no one else thinks that because they don't know your problem.
Right.
And so I think that's what you have to switch your mindset around. It only hurts you to be angry. It doesn't hurt anyone else to be angry. No one cares that you're angry.
So it's so interesting. And maybe in your EQ training, you have some tips for us on this. But I have heard that social media is making us less empathetic, and it's going to wreak havoc. And if we don't do something to help people stay empathetic or grow more empathy or come back to being empathetic, because it seems like we live in such a society anymore where people just don't care that much about other people. And, you know, it's the more they're on social media, it sort of dehumanizes other people, I think, in a way.
It does. There's this, it's almost like you're not getting any feedback. So typically if you and I are talking or we're in person together, I'm getting feedback about how you feel and how you think and what you need to say. You know, you have all these cues, right, that help you determine if what you're saying is not resonating, or if what you're saying has hurt someone, or if what you're saying has made them happy, or whatever, right? You're getting that feedback when you have those face-to-face conversations. Even when you don't, I worked remotely since the 90s, believe it or not. So back then we didn't have like a Zoom or anything. So you had to learn how to do that over the phone, like conference call. Mm-hmm. And even then you're still getting feedback, right? There's mm-hmm. still this feedback that you're getting. Social media, you don't get that feedback. It's very easy to just write something, walk mm-hmm. away. You don't ever have to know how that resonated with someone else. You don't ever have to know if they have something else to say about it. You can honestly just ignore that what you just put out in the world is out in the world, and you just get to walk away feeling like said what I needed to say. And that's fine. But there's someone else that has affected. And whether positively or negatively, it has affected someone in mm-hmm. some way. And you never get that feedback, right? So empathy is a skill. It's a skill. But it's almost also a mindset where it's like, if I put something out in the world, how is that going to resonate with someone, mm-hmm. right? That social management or the social awareness piece is what is missing, right? When it comes to things like social media, because it's very selfish in a way. It's, I get to say what I want to say to the world, and you know, so what, you know, whatever happens, happens. You're not thinking socially aware, mm-hmm. where if you had that conversation with another person, you likely would not have said what you just said, right?
Oh, people put stuff on social that I would bet you money they would never say to someone's face.
Never.
And it's turned into this ugly monster that's really kind of antisocial. I mean, the fact that we call it social media is bizarre.
It's kind of ironic, isn't it?
Not,
yeah.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. And it's that social aware piece that's missing. It's almost like it's just been forgotten that you're not just typing something into the laptop. You don't have this like journal that sits on your hard drive that no one else is ever going to see. Mm-hmm. You are putting something out into the world that is going to be there for forever.
Like those letters we used to write and burn, you know, they would say, write a letter, get it all out. And then you burn it. You don't give it to the person, and then you're hopefully get that off your chest. So you, when you do see the person, you can be responsible and deal with them in a way that's more productive for you and for them. But yeah, we're just flailing it out there into the world.
I like that analogy. People treat it like it's the same thing. Like I just mm-hmm. wrote this and now I burnt it. No, that's not what actually happened.
You burnt a bridge, or you burnt a friendship, or
you hurt someone.
Yes.
Like actually hurt someone with your words. But the empathy piece is missing because they never get that feedback. No one gets to tell them that they're being an asshole to their face. You know,
right.
you have just hurt someone, and yet you can just walk away. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the challenge with empathy right now, is that is a main way of, especially the younger generations, of communicating, mm-hmm. right? And so I'm actually certified in DISC training as well, which is really the ability to communicate, right? And understanding how other people need to be communicated with is just as important as how you need to communicate. And so, you know, social media is just one of those things where it's just really a challenge. I've definitely caught myself. I'm like, I am not responding that way. I am not gonna get myself involved. You know, every time when my husband was telling me about, he has this thing, men, he likes to argue about whether LeBron James or Michael Jordan is the best ever. Like that is his thing. Like he loves that argument. He's like, I went down a rabbit hole on social media the other day. I'm like, you need to stop doing that. Like, it's okay that somebody else thinks Michael Jordan is the best ever and you think LeBron James is the best ever. It's okay. Like, they were both great. Can we just all agree on that? So I think until people understand that core component, that you aren't just saying something and letting it go. You have hurt someone else.
Right. Yeah.
And you need to own that. Like, you need to, and it's okay. You know, I hate to say it, but it is okay. We've all said things face to face that maybe have hurt someone, right? But understand that you did. And understand that, you know, just own it. Just own it. And people just don't, because they can just walk away from their laptop and not have to ever think about it again if they choose to.
That's not good. So I have a question for you, Melanie. Since you've done disc training and this EQ and all of these wonderful things, as people get older, do you think their EQ gets better? Do you think they, like in disc training too, which is fascinating? I used to assist a woman who did disc training, and I have found that my disc, which is a little bit like, I don't want to compare it exactly to a Myers-Briggs, but it's like you get you're a DISC combination of all of those
in some way, shape, or form.
One usually is really dominant, or maybe two. And they're just different personality styles. I think there's another one that's a color, and it's a different, each person,
like an anagram, maybe
different color, and that, yeah. And, but it's that kind of a thing. And I found that mine has changed. Since I was in my 20s when I helped this woman, and she was doing disc training, and I took a test, and it's different. It's different now, you know, 40 years later, mine has changed. And would you say when people get older, you know, do they become more empathetic, or do they become less empathetic? Does it depend on the person? You know, I would love to get your take on that.
My take is this. I don't think it has anything to do with age as much as it has to do with experience. So your experiences change, your needs change, right? You know, when you're, mine has changed too, my disc. You know, I used to be a DI long time ago. Which is dominant and influential. And
I was too. In my 20s, I was kind of an ID, but
I was in my 20s, and it was because of where I was in my career. That's how I felt. Like, it was because I was trying to be successful, and I was trying to work all those hours, and I was trying to be a leader, and I was, you know, all these things. And then now, as I've gotten older, I'm actually an SC, believe it or not.
Oh my gosh. I'm like an SI,
right?
The C part of me is like pretty hopeless, but you're the planner. You're the planner. That's where that comes from. Yeah,
exactly right.
You got to plan more. Yeah,
my experience has changed. My need has changed. Right? I don't need to fight every day for a leadership position. I don't need to show my dominance in the workplace. Right? So, for me now, it's more about just being steady and being conscientious and, you know, planning and being able to, you know, assist other people and things like that. It's, I think my experience has changed, not so much my age, if that makes sense. And I think that's what changes. As people grow older, I think it depends on their experience, whether they are empathetic or not.
That's interesting. And it's interesting that both of ours shifted also to more of an S, which I think is a more empathetic style, a more empathetic trait in people too. So I wonder if, as we experience hurting other people or being hurt ourselves, or helping friends going through difficult situations, we become more empathetic.
People. That experience builds that skill. And I think that's what's important. And I do think that it's something that's learned, you know, it isn't just something you're born with. You know, how to communicate is definitely not something you're born with.
Right.
You know, how to be empathetic is not something you're born with. It is something that you learn with your experiences. You know, I remember being in third grade and being a mediator with the kids in the neighborhood. Like, that's just who I am at my heart. But it took me a long time to be that S. It took me a long time to learn how to be more empathetic and what I can let go and what I can't let go and what's good for my heart and what isn't. And I think some of that does come with age, but it's because of your experiences.
And I love that it's learned, and I think it's never too late to learn those things. So even, you know, if you're, if, and two, to maybe take one of those tests, I would highly recommend people. You were talking about self-awareness, and it's one way, I think, to bring a little more self-awareness in. I was fortunate in my 20s to work for a woman who was teaching all about, you know, attitude is changing your life. And she was doing DISC training, and she was a huge mentor to me to be able to just learn from this woman and her wonderful way of life and teaching. And so I got into a lot of that stuff early on, and then I kind of let it go as I went into my own career. But as I've gotten older, I've kind of picked it back up again. It's like, well, let me see, you know, what is my DISC profile now? And it's like, oh gosh, it really has changed. And,
really has shifted. I do a quad of assessments because I believe that it's important to help the whole person, right? That to me is what's really important. And so I do an EIQ assessment, which helps in those four areas we talked about earlier, understanding where you are and what the gaps are so that you can write a plan to help increase your levels. I do DISC, you know, which is all about communicating and having empathy for how other people need to communicate. I do motivators, which if you haven't done that one, it really is about decision making. Like, what are your values and how do you make decisions based on those values? And then the fourth one is the Wheel of Life, which really takes into account like where you think you are on, you know, things like your relationships and your spirituality and your religion and things like that. Because I think all four of those together really help show patterns. It helps show patterns. One is great, you know, like the DISC. It's great because it shows you, you know, kind of how to communicate. But all four of those together, you start seeing patterns of actual root causes of things and how you build that. So what we do at Total Leadership is we do all four of them, and then we write you a blueprint that says, here are the results of all four of those, and here is how we think that you can focus, and here are resources that you need in order to build those skills. So I think, you know, for me, knowing the whole person helps to develop that better plan of action, to help them just become more well-rounded in the places they want to. You know, it's very individualized. It's not, you know, the DISC training is individualized because it gives you your own assessment, but the results are not individualized.
Right.
Where what we do is we take all four of those and we actually individualize it. So, so it's all analyzed together. And I think people really enjoy that because it does, you wouldn't believe some of the patterns that show up in those, right?
I probably think people didn't ever realize. And I think a lot of people get into their 50s and it's like, what should I do with myself?
Now?
I've been doing this for 30 years. I don't want to do it anymore. What should I be, you know? Do you find that it helps people a lot?
It does really help people because I think we forget. As crazy as that sounds, I think we forget. I kind of fell into my first career, to be honest. It wasn't what I thought I would be doing. Never really considered myself an event manager so much, you know, or a marketer at all. Not really what I thought I would become. Like I said, I was going to be that nurse, right? So I kind of fell into it my very, very early 20s. And I just stayed there for almost 30 years, right? Because it's easier. And you kind of, you know, you're making a wage and maybe you have other benefits or whatever, whatever keeps you there, keeps you there. And I think you forget, I was really good at that, or that really made me happy, whatever it is, right? For me, it's writing. Like I forgot how much writing actually made me happy because I never really did it for those many years. So understanding your full self and really having that spectrum, I think really helps people then understand, oh, that's what I need to be doing, or that's how I can make improvements in my overall daily life to make me a happier and more self-aware person. So I really enjoy working, especially with women who just really want to understand and help them move forward. You know, younger women, I have someone right now I'm working with who just got out of college. She doesn't have any clue what she wants to do. Got her degree, but no clue what she wants to do. And with self-confidence and, you know, pushing that boundary, I enjoy working with younger women, but I enjoy working with older women as well, who are kind of in that transitional time.
Great. Yeah. So how can people find you and work with you?
Oh my gosh, too many ways. But you first start at totalleadershipcenter.com. So go there. But also you can reach out to me I'm on Facebook, I'm on Instagram. You can find me there. You know, just email me. Like you can leave my email here, Janie, too. I'm happy for that. Just reach out because I really enjoy working with women and I just want to make a difference. I do. And that's really what I want to do. And so,
Do you work with men too? Just out of curiosity or just
Oh,
women?
I do.
Oh,
I do.
Okay.
Less so, but I do. And, you know, I think it's different. It is different to work with men and women. But I do work with men who really feel like they need to understand themselves and maybe increase their leadership skills as well. And I think it's important. I find that a lot of men don't think about it as much, right? They don't kind of have that inward. There's like two kinds of self-awareness. You have an internal self-awareness and you have an external self-awareness. You know, so your internal awareness is what you think of yourself and your external awareness is what you think other people think of you. And so I think there's a difference between men and women and how they think of internal and external. And so for me, that's really exciting to have kind of that difference and see that difference. But yeah, I do work with both. But I do, I'd hate to say that I favor working with women, but I kind of do. I do favor.
I think being a woman, it's kind of, you know, you could relate probably more to where they've been, where you've been, or where they're going is where you're going, that kind of thing. Yeah.
To be fair, I did work in IT for 30 years. So
you've worked with a lot of men.
Pretty well too. But there is something to say about helping women with their self-confidence and how they relate to other women, especially. I see women with challenges in both of those areas quite significantly. And so that's kind of where my passion is. It's just helping women understand their own triggers, understand how to manage to that. And build that self-confidence to really thrive. That's what I like to do.
Yeah, and I think that's something we can use at any age as well. I think a lot of times we manage to get through life probably not nearly as confident as we could be, you know.
Right. Well, and transitions have a way of destroying your self-confidence a little bit.
That's a really good point. Yeah, you know, I went through one. You know, I had been in the same career for 35 years and lost a job I had for 13 years in a management transition. You know, I was at a senior level and the new person came in and pretty much cleaned all the older people out, which, you know, I've seen it happen before. I was part of it and it was devastating, but it was also an opportunity, you know, and I'm glad I'm in a different space and it's good. And it's, you know, and it's like, and I'm sure in another 10 years, I'll be in an even different space. And, you
That's
know,
right.
Transitioning never stops, but if we can, like you say, you're transitioning with so many things in your life right now. And, but you're planning for it and you're being clear about it and you're grateful for what you have. I mean, going back to the very beginning of our conversation, you know, it's like, that's That's what we have to do. So thank you. Thank you, Melanie, for sharing all of this. And I hope people that are in this space and have been moved by what you've shared will reach out to you and work with you. I think you have some great things to offer people. So,
well, thank you. I hope so. The more I can help, the better. For yeah. sure. That is my mission. So, but thank you for this. I really enjoyed it and meeting you. And, you know, if you can help one person today, help one person today.
Yep. I love that. Those are great parting words.
That's right.
Melanie, right. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Janie.
Wow. I am still just in awe of Melanie and her wisdom and the way that she is dealing with going blind in such a positive and inspirational way. And I hope you were inspired by what Melanie had to share as much as I was. And if you were, don't forget to like, subscribe, comment, give the 5-star rating, whatever you can do to help us get this information out to more people, because the world needs more of what Melanie has to offer and what we're sharing here on Reinvention Ready. I'm your host, Janie Genosis, and go out and make the rest of your life your best life. Thank you so much for being here. I'll see you soon.